Hi, I'm Paul Havershood, host of The Cost of Living. It's a show about money and how it shapes our lives. In big ways, like why inflation could get worse if we all make more money.
Here's the hard truth in all of this. Workers are going to have to eat that real wage loss.
And small ways, like what's the fastest way to order fast food?
That first Big Mac that comes out of the kitchen is going to the drive-thru.
Check out The Cost of Living. We're on CBC Listen or wherever you get podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Q. I will encourage you, before we get going today, to follow this show on Spotify Podcasts and Apple Podcasts. Here we go. Follow away, if you don't mind. I want to introduce you to an artist you may not be familiar with today. I was really blown away by her work. Her name is Hangama Amiri. She's becoming really well-known around the world for making these big masterpieces out of fabric. And a lot of that fabric is from a home she was forced to leave. Hangama was 7 when the Taliban took over Kabul in 1996. Her family was forced to flee Afghanistan, moved from country to country, finally ending up in Halifax, Nova Scotia, where she went to NASCAD, the College of Art and Design there, and then went to Yale to do her Master's of Fine Arts. But back to the idea of home, when you look at these big cloth paintings that she makes of busy streets in Kabul, of women sitting together on floor cushions, what you're seeing is Hangama literally piecing together her story, trying to figure out what home was and what it might be now. So Hangama has a new solo exhibition at the Cooper Cole Gallery in Toronto, and we asked her to come on so you could hear her story for yourself. But given that this is such a visual story, I want to let you know that before you listen, if you go to cbc.ca/Q, you'll find like a visual companion to this piece so you can see the pieces that we're talking about. Here's Hangama Amiri. Hey, how are you?
I am good. How are you, Tom?
I'm good. Thanks so much for making the time for us, hey?
Thank you for having me. This is really a pleasure.
It's a great pleasure to have you. I got to see some of your work in preparation for this interview, and it's quite striking and quite beautiful. I loved getting the chance to look at it.
Thank you so much for seeing them. Thank you.
I want to start out by talking a little bit about the idea of using art and textile art to stitch through memories. And I want to start with a memory from you. So growing up, your uncle, I think, had a tailor shop in Kabul. What do you remember about that shop and about the market?
Yeah, definitely. We lived in this community called Makriana Kohna. These were the complexes that were built during the Soviet in Afghanistan. The landscape architecture of these areas are that it has a small bazaar. So my uncle had a shop in this bazaar. And this bazaar was very close to my school, which was maybe 5 blocks down. So every morning when I would used to go to school, I would stop by at his shop. So it was really amazing just being at his place, seeing other people working for him, other clients bringing fabrics to his shop. And he had so many other stuff. I grew up like hearing his, you know, like the sound of scissors, like these heavy scissors that they used to use. Those memories were my foundation of what art is or what sort of creativity is or what sort of like this idea of like making things with material.
And your mom sewed as well, right?
I would say, I mean, every Afghan woman knows how to sew. And this was this small skill that was kind of passed around to us. I mean, to be honest, my brothers could also sew because it was something, a basic skill that we all need to have to learn. But not only that, I feel like in the Afghan households, women specifically, like young girls, are being taught from a very young age to how to do embroidery. These are this like very mundane things that you usually see in every Afghan household. So I learned basically from those things, yeah.
You've talked about visiting your uncle's tailor shop before school in Kabul, but of course that changes in 1996 when the Taliban takes over the city. Would you mind telling us what happens to your family after that?
Yeah, that memory was definitely a sad one, I must say. It was the early morning of 1996. I won't forget this. My father was there and he woke me up very early morning and he just said, like, we have to leave. We have to just flee. There's a cab waiting outside. And we just packed whatever belonging we had, like small belongings, nothing too huge. And we just left. And that was my last memory of Kabul City and that specific neighborhood that I just spoke about.
How old were you in 1996?
I was 6 to 7. I just attended first grade. Yeah.
What an age to have to get up out of bed, pack your belongings, and leave your home.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of bruises a large question in your heart, you know, as a child. Why are we going? And when are we going? And what are the reasons? And as a child, we didn't have much kind of perspective in the political landscape that were happening back then. Yeah.
And then you kind of start bouncing from country to country, right?
Yes. We were refugee first in Peshawar, Pakistan. And then in 1999, we became refugee again to another neighboring country, Dushanbe, Tajikistan. And my mom applied an application through the UNICEF. And then we became immigrant, luckily, in Canada in 2005. So it's been several countries just moving and leaving friends behind and families and communities. So it's rather sad, but also every time that we moved, we become introduced to new culture. So it's joyful, but also hard and very difficult. Yeah.
The story I heard is that while you were traveling with your family and trying to figure out where you were going to end up, this perspective, this thing we're talking about today of using fabric and using textiles in your life, even showed up then. Like you were sewing dolls with whatever kind of scraps of fabric you could get. Is that right?
Yeah, I didn't grow up having so much material around me, or I wasn't rich, or we weren't that much wealthy people, just working class people. The only thing that I had access was these fabrics, like used fabrics or old, textiles or clothes. So I grew up like, cutting fabrics and making a small dolls out of them, and that was my foundation of art, basically. Is how I define myself as an artist today. It's because I found a high value in these skills that were passed around woman to woman. And, that's something which is very unique in the art history as well, because in my adult life, I was taught that art is only painting and the history was so much evolved around painting. So for me, I just couldn't figure out, and I had this battle with medium of paint because I really wanted to feel something really close to home and feel something familiar, but I just couldn't get with the material or medium of paint. But when I started using fabric and taking my canvases outside of the structure, it really opened a new space for me, a new world, and which was my world. And that world is scraps of memory. These are fragmented events that I went through. And that kind of opened another door for me to like bring these fabrics from these countries that I left as an immigrant or as a refugee.
I mean, I love so much of what you said just then, the idea of that, you were studying painting and painting was art, but it never really hit you. And then I love the idea, something I was going to ask you about anyway, but I love the way you put it there about fabric being memories and scraps of fabric being scraps of memories. You know, it's interesting what you say about the way that people talk about textile art is that people talk about it as craft and not art. And I don't mean to disparage craft at all. I mean, I come from craft and I have a great love of craft, but galleries never used to hang woven pieces or quilted pieces or anything like that. What have you noticed about that when it comes to fabric as a medium and whether or not it gets the respect it deserves?
Yeah, I just feel like using textile or fabric has a way, way, way longer history than painting did. I mean, I cannot first put whose was first or whose was second, but I do feel like using fabric or fashion in a sense has a long history. And it's just really sad that how art history or the Western canon art history really praised certain types of art making as more valued than the other certain type, which also evolved very gender based construct fields, because they thought the fabric was very much women's hobbies inside their homes, right? Which was in some realities, that was our material that we used to spend our time inside homes, right? Because we didn't have access outside that much, But it's really interesting for me to see, specifically in today's contemporary art, I see a lot of women, I see a lot of queer people, I see a lot of male and female artists use this fabric in their work. So it definitely has changed a lot in the art history. You know, it's really interesting because, like, when I'm thinking about this recent series that I've done for Cooper Cole, which is portrait series, historically speaking, portrait painting is what people know a lot. You know, when people ask you that if you're an artist, they're like, can you paint me? You know, can you paint my portrait? But they never say that, can you make a textile out of my portrait? So there's a difference. There's something that I am so intrigued to change that, yes, painting is a substance that is, it has much more human action or human mobility with the paint onto the canvas, right? So there's much more touch with the paint on the canvas. But people don't really think about that. Fabric also has that, because fabric also has been painted, whether through machine or dyed by hand or just, you know, colored by hand as well. It's just the way people read these two different material and action is what makes these two medium different. But in reality, they are very much the same, I would say.
I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. Coming up, more of my conversation with textile artist Hangama Amiri.
One of the best shows of the year, according to Apple, Amazon, and Time, is back for another round. This season, we're diving deep into some of McCartney's most beloved songs. Yesterday, Band on the Run, Hey Jude. And McCartney's favorite song in his entire catalogue. Here, there, and everywhere. Listen to Season 2 of McCartney, A Life in Lyrics on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. You're in the middle of my conversation with the artist Hangama Amiri. She's a textile artist whose work is largely influenced by her own refugee story, fleeing Afghanistan when she was 7 years old after the Taliban took over and ending up in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Ever since then, Hangama says she's been trying to, quote, stitch together her identity. So before we go on with the rest of the conversation, I want to let you know that you can follow along with the visuals. You can see some of the pieces that we're talking about by going to cbc.ca/Q. And you'll see this next piece, which is called Bazaar, like B-A-Z-A-A-R. It shows a beauty salon. It's a textile store, a postcard shop in Kabul. It's one of her most famous works. And Hangama will tell you, it brings her back to the real bazaars she went to as a kid. Take a listen.
Bazaar in Afghanistan or Central Asia countries, or let's say in Turkey even, the stores are very placed side by side. So there's so many things you see at the same time. So for me, because I grew up in Afghanistan and specifically in this bazaar, this was one of my spaces that I felt so happy and very festive. These spaces were my happiest childhood memory, to be honest. And not only that, because every Eid or every celebration that we had in Afghanistan, we would go straight to bazaar to buy new clothes, to buy new things. And so for me, I really wanted to create that immersive textile piece that could bring that experience to me. You know, it's this experience of world building. This is something that I couldn't do with painting on a stretcher bar, you know. This was once I took her outside of that stretcher board, it really created my world. It really made me closer to those memories that to make things bigger than my imagination or bigger than my worldview. Again, when you stand in front of this piece, you feel very small. You become that child perspective looking at these spaces. So that's what fabric does. And that's, I think it holds a very strong ways of making and ways of stretching memory, ways of stretching experiences.
I love where you when you talk about where you source the fabrics. I mean, it's not always easy to get fabrics, but I read the story about when I was reading about you, you go into New York City sometimes. You're in New Haven, Connecticut, so it's not that far to go. You just have to get on the train or get in the car or something, and you'll go into New York City sometimes, sure. And you'll go to this shop, which I believe is run by folks from Afghanistan, and you'll be able to buy fabrics there. I wonder if you could just tell me how you feel when you walk in there, and how you feel when you're touching the fabrics in that store, and what it meant to you to find that store.
Yeah. No, it definitely is like a reminiscing of how I used to go to my uncle's shop. I think the fact that I'm finding that similar or familiar experience here in my neighboring city, which is New York, it really makes me feel very close to that specific space, which I call home. Even though I'm so in a diaspora experiences, it's a very diasporic, it's very alienated at times. But just entering those shops and just saying, you know, Assalamu alaikum, chitor esti, khub esti, just like a very normal conversation to have with my Afghan fellows. That's really beautiful. It just makes my world so bigger. And it just makes my work so connected to my own culture and to my own upbringings. But again, these shops, shopmakers or these stores and the Afghan shopmakers, they also bring fabrics not only from here, but they also bring a lot of cultural fabrics too. So that's, again, they made my world very closer in my own studio, let's say.
I mean, I love the image of you going in there and feeling a little bit closer to home. And that idea of home keeps coming up and over and over and over in your work and you know, of course, having to leave. And I know you've told stories in the past about, you know, being around your mom and her friends and her aunts and, you know, and so many women as they navigated their daily lives. And your dad wasn't with you too much when you were sort of in those migration periods. And that kind of lends itself to the way your art is about women quite often, you know, big cloth murals, ads for hair oil and skincare products. Tell me about what you feel when you make this work and why you're drawn to these intimate scenes of women and their lives in Afghanistan.
I think it's a very personal experience for me. These are the experiences that I grew up being with my mom a lot and with her friends and with her community that we grew up. And just being around her, I kind of found the very vital spaces that they create for themselves, right? Like when I found that, it was like, it's really beautiful and intimate. It's because the spaces that she would take me with, it was run by women and kind of made by women and kind of celebrated by women. So it holds a very special place for me. And I think that's why in today's studio practice, unintentionally, the woman subject keeps coming back to my work. And especially those places, I feel like it's a way of making a space in the art history canon as well, right? Like I'm using fabric, which is also their own material and my material as a woman, you know, creating a space that we never spoke about these contemporary nuances from Afghanistan or even from my diasporic experiences. So for me, as an artist, this is one of the ambition I have as an artist to create this platform in the art history so that the next generation of me sees these images and they feel belong to this art visual canon as well. This is something we don't have. Yeah. And I hope I'm making that space for them as well and for myself as well.
I mean, that's especially poignant, I mean, given when the Taliban took over Kabul again, you know, in 2021 and the devastating loss of rights to women again. When you were in the U.S. at that time, as much as you want to tell me, like, what were the conversations like for you then? What were you talking about with especially the women in your family?
It was, I think, 2021, specifically August till October. Those couple of months were very heavy for us, I would say. I just feel like in the both end, we just both felt so hopeless in some way because my cousins needed a lot of help from us, or my female cousins. And then at the same time, I was in America and I just couldn't do much outside of myself as well, or outside of the practice that I have in here. So it was a very hopeless situation. But at the same time, just being connected with the conversation, being with them on and on daily to really know what's going on and what we can help little by little. That was the only space of refuge we both find from both sides. I mean, I think it was those moments were pretty difficult for us to go through and still is. But luckily, they specifically from my family side, they are, you know, getting outside of Afghanistan slowly but surely, let's say. But it's a very time-consuming process as well, and it needs a lot of patience. And unfortunately, that government is not a place to live and make future, to be honest.
Does that change the way you make your art? Does it change the way you think about your art, especially how much of it deals with displacement and how much of it deals with Afghan women?
No, actually, I feel like it makes me to have more revenge in the art, to have more space to, you know, talk about these things. Because again, when time has more power than our human pace, this is something that as an artist, I think it's my duty to capture these moments, no matter how slow my pace would be. But the time is running faster. It's because if the history is, you know, trying to erase these events or erase women's, you know, participation in the public, but I am here because I have the penmanship or I have the color and you know, pencil to draw these events through a very factual and truth point of view, you know. So in a way, I am always here to make my own history and my own ways of storytelling, specifically from the families and the close friends that I have in Afghanistan and outside. So I just feel like it's never stops in me and in my practice. It's a continuation conversation within myself, I would say.
I love the way you put that there, that there's more revenge in my art.
Mm-hmm.
Let me close off this way. So the show we've been talking about today is Circle of Friends, the show that's on right now. A lot of friends and colleagues from where you currently live in New Haven. I know before we started the interview, we were talking a little bit about your time in Halifax. And of course, throughout this conversation, we've been talking about your time in Afghanistan. This is sort of a big question, but I want to ask it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
What does home mean to you these days?
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's a question that always jaunts me. It always pauses me a lot. I think for me, it's more about these memories that I have of home. It's more about the feelings or the smells or the touch that I have, what home means or how I can define home. But physically being there, it's hard to experience, or it's been hard for me to experience these past couple of years. So for me, I can just rely on those stories and narratives that are passed on to me. And that kind of completes my definition of home, living as a diaspora in a foreign land.
What a joy to talk to you, and what a joy to get to spend some time talking about your art today. And thanks so much for making the time for us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's my conversation with Hangama Amiri, who is an artist who makes incredible images with textiles. If you're in Toronto, she's got a new show at the Cooper Cole Gallery called Circle of Friends, and it runs until May 4th. What else do I have to tell you? Oh, for one, yeah, don't forget to, for the next little while, we'll be encouraging you to follow us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. I was just encouraged to maybe guilt you into it, you know, like, oh, it's not that hard to do, is it? It can't be that hard. You know, you think you're not up to it? No, I would really appreciate it if you could follow. And it turns out it makes a really big difference in the show. The other conversation we have up today is with, oh, I love this one. It's one of our most successful, most watched like YouTube and Instagram and TikToks of ours. Laura Ramoso, who I haven't seen anyone watch her TikTok videos or Instagram reels without falling in love with her, without like laughing out loud. Because even if you don't have like a German mom the way she does, or a Italian dad the way she does, there's something about making fun of your parents, like doing an impression of your parents, that is so relatable and so beautiful. And she's so good at it. We had a really great conversation about coming from TikTok to selling out theaters all over the world. So go check that out wherever you got this podcast. We'll see you soon. Later on.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.